Your feature presentation.
First of all, I didn't know that you made us an intro music yet. That's so great.
That was a reference to some music they used to play in British cinemas just before the movie started.
Oh.
Which nobody would have gotten. Yeah, something like that.
Sure. Sure. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to Slightly Something Else, the podcast.
Yes, it's us again.
It's us again, the podcast where we talk about whatever we feel like talking about this week related to games or whatever. This week, Yahtzee and I have decided to delve into the world of point-and-click adventure games.
Yes, which someone brought up in the comments or the chat somewhere last time, and I was intrigued because it's a topic close to my heart. Did you know, Jack, I used to make adventure games?
I know that you've made many games. I've actually, I've played very few of your games. So, no, I didn't know you made adventure
games. Well, back in the day, I got my start in the online indie game spheres making point-and-click adventure games. And when we say point-and-click adventure games, we should specify we're talking about the sort of thing back in the 90s that were chiefly championed by companies like LucasArts and Sierra, where it was you'd have a character in a 2D environment and you'd collect inventory items and use inventory items on things to proceed the puzzles and open new areas and progress the story.
Okay, I'm with you.
These days you say it's point and click and some people think you're talking about RuneScape or Diablo or some shit.
Oh, there is, to be fair, there is a ton of point and clicking in those games.
Well, let's not get back into video game genre names and why they're dumb.
Semantics, my friend. Semantics.
Yes. But the reason why I started off making adventure games is because I was big into adventure games back in the day. I played The Secret of Monkey Island back on my old Amiga 600. One of the best adventure games. I played all the LucasArts ones. Zack McCracken and the Alien Mindbenders, I think, was my first.
That's just a great title.
The second game to use the Scum engine, or script creation utility for Maniac Mansion, that was LucasArts' in-house dev kit for their point-and-click adventure games.
Okay.
And, of course, I played those are the first adventure games I played. I then also went back and played the Sierra games a little after the fact, which were a different beast to the LucasArts ones.
Yeah, very much so. The classic quantity versus quality, as some might
precise,
argue.
Precise, yeah. LucasArts made a handful of some of the best point-and-click adventure games of all times. They had great art, they had great storytelling, very sharp writing. Tim Schafer, of course, worked for LucasArts back in the day, who now has his own company, Double Fine, that's best known for really good writing and not much else.
Hooey!
Yes, they made Secret of Monkey Island, they made Full Throttle, Day of the Tentacle,
Grim Loom, Fandango.
Grim Fandango, mostly comedy ones. There were some serious ones, like Loom, like The Dig, which probably was the least of them all. There was a couple of Indiana Jones games. One
That's
was
right.
a direct adaptation of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and one was a completely original Indiana Jones story, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis.
A game in which I own and have installed on my computer. Have yet to play it. I'm excited to delve into it.
You should give that a try. It's a weird game because it's got multiple paths with the slightly changed the puzzles you have to do.
Ooh.
But it's really, it doesn't tell you the point when you're picking the path. So you just play through the game once and then you play through it again and go, hang on, why are all the puzzles different? I don't understand.
I don't know if this is a conversation you and I had, but I've always assumed that a point-and-click adventure game is the perfect medium for an Indiana Jones game, as that's what Indiana Jones is doing for most of the movies, is just solving puzzles and exploring.
Well, certainly the Uncharted game has followed that lead.
Well, no, the Uncharted game is about shooting.
There's a fair bit of violence in Indiana Jones. I mean, if you go back in the Indiana Jones films and watch them with your kids or something, you might be startled by how much graphic violence there is in them.
There is a lot of blood splatter, that is true.
Yeah, and even when it's not overtly bloody, you got stuff like Nazis being crushed under the treads of a tank. You got being minced up by propellers.
Sure, sure. I think though, like, those are kind of the pointed moments of the Indiana Jones movies. Like, we remember them so fondly because they are, like, it's not an action bonanza. They're adventure movies. And so it's this lovely mix of travel, excitement, adventure, puzzles, mysteries, and violence.
But let's not get sidetracked.
All right.
Because I was saying that LucasArts made this small handful of really good games.
Okay.
And their main rival was Sierra, of course, who made multiple series of multiple games and quite a few games beyond those, and were very much taking the quantity over quality approach.
Mm-hmm.
But their games were a lot less thoughtful, a lot less finely made. Ooh. They had Space Quest, literally a quest set in space.
Yeah.
And King's Quest, literally a quest about a king.
That's right.
In generic fantasy world.
Don't forget about Police Quest.
Police Quest, Quest for Glory.
Yeah.
They had a couple of like outlying series, like the Gabriel Knight series and the Phantasmagoria series, which was from that whole CD era.
Don't forget about arguably their most popular Quest games is Fuck Quest.
You mean Leisure Suit Larry?
Is that what it was called in the UK?
Yes.
Because here in America, it was called something different.
Well,
yeah.
The original text adventure from which the Leisure Suit Larry games were spawned was called, I think it was called Soft Porn Adventure.
Oh, really?
Really not terribly subtle with the plan going ahead with that.
Yeah.
That was sort of adapted into Leisure Suit Larry 1.
Mm-hmm.
And funnily enough, I happen to know there's a very crudely made indie game using the Sierra AGI engine that is called Fuck Quest, but it wasn't an official Sierra product.
That's a real thing? That's great. Hold on. Now I gotta Google
it. It's a real thing on the internet. Probably best not investigated too closely.
Oh, I have a tab open now. That's gonna mess up my analytics.
Certainly will. One is, Sierra, while LucasArts were making what I would call genuinely artistic and thoughtful and well-made adventure games, Sierra were mainly pissing about. There are two Sierra games from the same era that both end with the main characters being transported into the real world, into the Sierra offices, and hanging out with the Sierra programmers and sucking up to Ken or Roberta Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Which LucasArts would never have done, because that is just pissing about.
It's really hard to come up with ideas, though, and so sometimes you just reuse stuff, and that's okay.
It was very dumb. But at the same time, there were some like good Sierra games, you know, if you throw enough shit at a wall, something sticks.
Because
one of the driving sources of conflict at the time, as I recall, was that in LucasArts games, they were specifically made so you couldn't die. There was no failure state in LucasArts games. No matter what you did, you could always proceed.
Sure.
You might get admonished for doing the wrong thing, but you could never be left in an unplayable state or have to reload a save.
Mm-hmm.
And Sierra games took, if anything, the precise opposite approach. Everything would kill you in Sierra games. You had to save constantly.
Yes.
And not just that, you could also like make the game impossible to win without realizing it. Like, you'd miss an opportunity or lose an important inventory item, and there'd be no way of getting it back.
So then you have to go back, like, 8 or 10 saves, so you'd have to label all of your saves specifically, yes.
Yeah.
The saves
King's
come.
King's Quest was terrible for that.
Mm-hmm.
King's Quest 5, in particular.
Well.
There was a bit where there's a cat chasing a mouse across the screen, and it only happens once. One time you see a cat chasing a mouse across the screen, and if you don't have a boot in your inventory and don't throw a boot at the cat at that one moment opportunity you're given, then you get fucked over like an hour later because the mouse is not around to save you from captivity.
That's a bit much. I'll agree. But, that is a bit much.
But, you know, Sierra fans would say, ooh, LucasArts games are for babbies. There's no challenge.
I did like all of the deaths in the Space Quest games.
That became part of the fun. It was part of the identity. You had to find all the funny ways to die.
Yes, and then the game would relentlessly mock you for being such an idiot. It's cute. It's charming.
Yeah. As long as you're not, you know, it's not the sort of thing that gets on your wick after a while.
Well,
being called an idiot for not knowing exactly what the problem is.
By contrast, in a lot of LucasArts game, point-and-click games that I have played, I often find myself not knowing what I'm missing, and so just walking back to every place I've been and hunting for that one item that I don't seem to have, you know?
I think I once called it, when I work hung out in amateur adventure game creation circles, I once referred to this as keyring syndrome, where if you haven't designed your adventure game intuitively enough, the player just resorts to going through everything and clicking everything in their inventory on everything.
Yeah, just rubbing everything.
Yeah, try to brute force their way through the puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I've found through a lot of LucasArts games. And that could just be me. Maybe I don't have the right mindset for adventure games, but I just felt like... in so many... I'm thinking specifically of Day of the Tentacle. I ran into a lot of roadblocks in Day of the Tentacle.
Yeah, there's a lot of inventory keyring stuff going on in Day of the Tentacle.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the ways these adventure games were made, what would normally happen is you'd find one item that would open one thing that would get you another item that could open another thing, and it was just about finding the start of the chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think... The Simon the Sorcerer games were really bad for that. That was a British third-party adventure game by Adventuresoft, I think.
Okay.
But the first game featured the vocal talents of Chris Barry, who played Rimmer in Red Dwarf.
Ooh.
Fun fact for everyone there.
That's a very fun fact.
Yes, I was a big fan of Red Dwarf growing up, because I'm British and it's the law.
Touché. I've also watched a fair bit of Red Dwarf growing up because it was on PBS on Saturdays, public broadcasting.
Ooh.
And, you know, we didn't have cable, so it's either that or, I don't know, sports or something.
So there were some inherent problems with the standard adventure game setup.
Mm-hmm.
The old keyring syndrome, the old chain syndrome. But I think what marks LucasArts out is that even in their earliest games, they found ways to rise above that.
Okay.
Because if you look at The Secret of Monkey Island, the inventory puzzles to get through things, that's just like a baseline. It's all the stuff they build up on top of that that makes that game really good. It's the characters and the conversations and the puzzles you solve through conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole insult sword fighting concept, I happen to think, was genius.
Mm-hmm.
That was where you had to win a number of sword fights. And the way you win a sword fight is not by being the best at sword fighting, but being the best at insulting your opponent.
Right.
So what would happen is you'd like fight to a standstill, and then the person who was like at that moment winning would say an insult, and the other person has to respond with the correct comeback to the insult, and if they don't, then they lose further ground.
Ooh.
It was a reference to like old swashbuckling movies.
Yeah.
That was always about the banter,
and that's very fun. Yeah.
So the way that worked from a gameplay perspective was that you go out into the field to get into random battles, and you'd like throw insults at the enemy pirate that you'd heard other enemy pirates use on you, and you had to hope that they'd use the correct comeback so that then you'd know it and you could use it on other pirates in the future. And then by the end of it, you've built up this lengthy repertoire of insults and correct responses to insults.
That is such a fun adventure game level up system where you're not getting stronger, you're not getting like points that you put into your armor, you're just building up your vocabulary.
Yeah. And that was fun, and it's like more sophisticated than just finding the keys to go in the locks constantly.
Yeah, yeah.
And but it didn't end there, because the true genius of the insult sword fighting was the final boss. The final boss with the sword master.
Mm-hmm.
That you had to beat to win the side quest, let's say.
Okay.
And when you went up against the sword master, they used an entirely new repertoire of insults that you'd never heard before. But they had the same comebacks. You had the same list of comebacks, and each one...
Ooh.
Had a comeback that fit it. So it wasn't just understanding that A, you use B on A. You have to be smart enough to understand what comeback sounds like the best response to the new insult.
Sure, sure. To make that logical leap of like, oh, this insult kind of sounds like this other insult that I heard, so I will use. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm with
you. You can't brute force that. You have to be smart. You have to be able to like pass the insult and figure out the ideal response.
Very, very interesting.
So that's how adventure games excel, because let's face it, the keyring system and the chain system is kind of sloppy design.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of annoying for the player.
Yes.
And if adventure games had one thing that caused its downfall, is that most adventure game developers didn't understand that principle. They've just like copied that thing.
It's very simple. Like, it's very simple to say, like, oh, the player has a door that they can't get past. It has an egg-shaped key. So in three rooms before that, I need to put an egg.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very easy.
So as a lot of people will tell you, these days, adventure games aren't really a thing. There's no demand for them. The ones that do exist mainly exist out of nostalgia.
Yeah. Oh, well, Tim Schafer. That's Tim Schafer's bread and butter now.
It was Telltale Games' entire bread and butter as well.
You know, they just
bought up old adventure game property after old adventure game property and hacked out new episodic installments.
I don't know if that counts. I don't know if Telltale counts as adventure games.
Fucking what?
I think Telltale games are visual novels. There's no puzzles to solve in Telltale games.
Okay, you're talking about late Telltale. I'm talking about early Telltale.
Oh, okay.
Telltale got their start making like licensed sequels to old adventure game properties. They started with Sam and Max, I think.
Okay.
They did one for Monkey Island. They did a couple of others, and they were all point-and-click adventures in the traditional sense. Inventory puzzles, dialogue, all of that.
Gotcha,
it was around the time they got success with The Walking Dead that they transitioned to what you're talking about. The visual novel choices matter. Such and such will remember you said that.
Right.
Subgenre of games.
The choice-making simulator. Absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I was as you were going through, as I was thinking about like a modern point and click adventure, I think we can look at something that is point and click adventure, not modern, but you know, something very popular, something like Myst.
Hmm.
Right? Very point and clicky, a very key ringy, of course, but you know, very different presentation than a standard point and click.
Yeah. Hmm. Kind of aged like milk.
Oh God.
Because that was like around the time digital art was a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Digital, like 3D rendered art, was a new thing. So part of the selling point was that its beautiful backgrounds, but it was just, you know, early, about as well as you could do 3D rendered art.
Oh yeah,
and that was the main selling point.
It was
the puzzles,
right?
Yeah, the puzzles were just arbitrary silliness.
Sure, but I do think that it helped. It helped kind of plant point and click adventure in a new era of video gaming.
Well, it was the start of like first person adventure game stuff, which these days you can see in stuff like Amnesia: The Dark Descent.
Hmm. Okay.
So first person adventuring, of course, wasn't really a thing before 3D graphics was a thing.
Hmm.
There was some like first person point and clicks in the 90s, the Tex Murphy games, games like Realms for the Haunting.
Mm.
Sorry, I needed to run the old brain water wheel for a few seconds there.
There was a slew of tiny point and clicks as soon as like flash games became popular. Web-based point and clicks were all over the place.
Yeah, there was a lot of those escape room games web.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like dirty games. I remember as a teenager, I forget what website it was on, but playing a game called Jake the Pimp, in which you played a character who was, it was very Leisure Suit Larry. You know, you had to make the correct choices in order to get your character laid.
Yeah, there was a bit of that in the old browser game heyday.
Mm-hmm.
The old Flash browser game heyday. And I think the reason for that was the same reason adventure games were popular in the first place, because it fit the medium that everyone was using anyway.
Ooh, yeah.
Because that was the start of PC gaming. Everyone had PCs for work, and they wanted to piss about with them. So the early PC games were all using the medium and the tools that the medium already had.
Right, right.
So you had typing, you had like text-based stuff, mm-hmm. and then mouse click stuff, in contrast to systems designed purely for games, which was like Twitch arcade stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Initially.
I think that's a really interesting point, by the way.
So there were a lot of games early on in PC gaming that looked like work. In fact, there were a lot of games that deliberately made themselves look like work.
Sure.
But yeah, PC gaming started with games that were more writing-based and text-based, or more strategic stuff.
Sure, sure.
Like your Civilization and things.
Anything something where you're moving your mouse around a lot, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so adventure games were originally part of that.
Mm.
You know, the narrative focus, the clicking around and things. And browser games were the same thing. We had a browser anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We were using it to look up our emails and things. So let's continue using our mouse to click away at this silly game.
Get in there with your mouse. Absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously we had a few famous ports. I know the, Maniac Mansion NES port is supposed to be legendarily bad.
It really is. Yeah. Part of the reason was because it had to go through Nintendo, and Nintendo were having none of the sort of slightly edgy humor that ran through a lot of the adventure games at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at like something like Space Quest, some of the deaths in those games are like astonishingly gory.
Yes!
And it's just because there was no system of censorship at the time. It was just like dudes making the games and pissing about. There was no controversy because, you know, it was so niche.
Well, and, you know, I think I suppose, like, just for me, I got into these types of games very, very late in my life, as we didn't grow up. My household did not grow up with a computer. I did not have access to these games. And so it wasn't until, you know, relatively recently that I started discovering games like this. And so,
So why don't you talk about that? What was it that drew you to them? Because, of course, adventure games faded away and out of popularity as video games became more sophisticated, as the console games and the PC games market started to merge more.
Sure.
And rather than having to compromise between pure gameplay with the consoles and pure narrative on the PC,
mm-hmm.
you could have both. I want to say the point of maximum merge was towards the end of the late 90s when we had games like Half-Life and Deus Ex come out.
Sure. I think
So what drew you to the genre in later life?
It was probably the immense success of the Tim Schafer Kickstarter campaign.
That certainly brought it back on the map, didn't it?
Well, and it was so wildly successful that, you know, you say to yourself, what the hell is this all about? And so, you know, I started playing some of the old LucasArts games. I got my first introduction to a text-based adventure game through Frog Fractions, actually.
Yes. Good old Frog Fractions.
Good old Frog Fractions that has a segment that is just a text-based adventure game. By the way, one of the most fun gaming experiences of my life was figuring out how to work a text-based adventure game. That was amazing.
I have a fondness for text-based adventure game, because you know what the advantage of text-based adventure game had over the graphic adventure that came about later on was that you don't really get the keyring problem.
Right.
You actually have to think about what specifically you're going to do. You can't just say use hamster on bedspread. And then just trust that the main character would have some clear idea of what you wanted to do with it. No, you had to specifically say, smear hamster fur on pillow.
Right.
In order to frame the hamster for the sexual molestation of the elderly woman.
Of course, the classic hamster elderly woman scenario.
You had to be specific.
Right. Well, you know, like, no, you need, there's the
you
hamster.
You need to be specific in...
There's the hamster gilf scenario, and there's the Sphinx's riddle. Like, those are the two big ones, I think, in games.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How are you going to handle those?
Yeah, the classic tropes.
The classic tropes. Right. And so, like, then, you know, now that I have access to all of the world's knowledge and a gaming PC, I started getting more into them. Some of them an immense amount of fun, some of them less so. That's
interesting. Mm. I would have said the only reason a lot of them are still around and talked about is because of nostalgia. And that's presumably why Broken Age did so well in its Kickstarter.
Thank you for saying the name. I forgot the name of it.
Yeah, well, it was a very fucking forgettable game when it finally came out.
It really was. It really was. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful game, but just, yeah, very, very forgettable.
Yeah, it was Tim Schafer's baby. And he was only like, he worked as part of a team on like The Secret of Monkey Island and other LucasArts adventure games. I think he's a very good writer. He's a very good comedy writer. Mm-hmm. Personally, I don't think he's ever proved himself as a game designer.
I might be able to agree with that.
Psychonauts is his high spot. It's got its issues.
It has a lot.
But it's basically fun.
Yeah, sure. I guess I can. I think it has more issues than fun, but that's a to each their own situation. I think something like what was the other popular one? I want to say this was what was the Thimbleweed Park? Was that what it was called?
Yes, that was by Dave Gilbert, wasn't it?
Yes.
Who was also like ex-LucasArts.
Yeah, the fun also, little X-Files-y point-and-click game.
Let me just look that up.
Okay.
Yeah, developed by Ron Gilbert.
Yeah.
Not Dave Gilbert. Dave Gilbert's someone else.
You know, which also had its issues as far as length is concerned, but a very, very fun experience overall.
Yeah, and very specifically designed to evoke that whole Maniac Mansion, Secret of Monkey Island period.
Yes, yes.
With all the pixel art that comes with it.
It's beautiful. It's character swapping. It's the X-Files. It's a little Twin Peaks-y. It's great. It's super fun. And I think like we're still getting that. I know I've played a bunch of more modern ones. There was that like steampunky robot one, Mechamania.
Machinarium?
Ooh,
is that it?
There you go. That sounds right. Let's just say it is.
Machinarium, where you're like a little robot with a... with big head.
Yes. Yeah, you're a little robot with a big head. You know, I thought that was a really nice length. And you know, going back over in the previously recorded live days, going back through a lot of the original space quests and police quests was a ton of fun.
You know what's very telling is how you're talking about this like you've played a whole bunch of them and you just swept through them all.
Yeah.
Because that, I think, is part of the nub of the matter for why adventure games sort of died out. Because they don't really survive for very long in the age of the internet. They don't hold you up for very long when you can just look up the solutions to everything. When I was a kid and we didn't have the internet, adventure games lasted a hell of a lot longer, as you can imagine.
Oh yeah,
you get stuck in a puzzle. You just got to figure it the fuck out.
Well, wasn't
the only alternative was to hang around the news agent, like leafing through the like letters page of video game magazines, hoping someone will have asked a question about the one specific part you're stuck on.
Wasn't there a theory that Sierra games were so hard to get people to call the Sierra tip line because there was a paid tip line?
That may well have been the scam. There was, I think Let's Assume Larry 3 did this, possibly some others, but every time you died, there were three buttons: restore game, quit game, order hint book. Which sounds like a joke, but if you pressed it, it would take you to a phone, to like a phone number that you could call and literally order a hint book.
That's fair. No, I think like they do have a place. I think like point and click adventures, text adventure games have a place. I just feel like we need to make them tighter experiences. I saw someone in chat bring up one of the best text-based adventure games ever made, Don't Shit Your Pants, which is a brilliant piece of game.
Deconstructive, certainly.
But it gets to the core. It gets to the core of what makes the experience fun is you are looking to solve a problem in a intellectually satisfying way.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like the game presents conditions. You must. Well, it's right there in the title. Don't shit your pants. You need to shit. You are wearing pants. You must find a way around this sticky problem. And the game rewards like lateral thinking.
Yes.
Like if you just take your pants off and shit on the floor, there's an award for that.
Because you didn't shit your pants.
Exactly. That's brilliant. You won. You are the king of shitting.
At very least, you're the king of not shitting in your pants. And that to me is fun.
But that game used like a text parser, of course. Mm. So part of the fun is like deducing specifically what you had to type. There's even a gag where if you try to open the door, it says, you try pulling the door, but it doesn't open, which is the hint that you're supposed to push the door, of course.
Yes.
But yeah, that's not the... it doesn't have the problem that most like mainstream adventure games have with all the just the clicking on things.
Yes.
To brute force your way through. And as I say, with internet guides, the games just don't have last ability anymore, which is why what's... I don't think the series did die out. I think it's evolved. The concept of the adventure game evolved into a number of different genres that we have now. Survival horror evolved from adventure games. There's a lot of first-person shooters and action adventures that have puzzle elements that owe a lot to the adventure game tradition. Mm-hmm. It just all blended in nicely with a nice core challenge loop. So that you don't just breeze through everything with a walkthrough like you did with your standard adventure games. But on the other side of things, if you just wanted the story and didn't care about a challenge, they evolved in a different direction into visual novels and walking simulators.
Sure.
For the people who just want that experience. Because if you've got an adventure game, a classic adventure game with the walkthrough, it might as well just be a walking simulator at that point. Mm. There's nothing like to get in the way.
That's very, very true. That's very, very true. What I will say is it was those Sierra text-based adventure games and that kind of lateral thinking that got me very, very interested in tabletop role-playing games. There is nothing I enjoy more now playing or running a tabletop role-playing game than my players using that kind of lateral thinking. And I wish, I know it can't be, that stuff can't happen in video games because it's coded, you know, but I wish there was a way to bring that into more video games because that is so much fun.
Like you could work AI dungeon into a video game somewhere.
Ooh, right? Or it's like, could you mix AI dungeon with a point and click so that every time you played the game, it was something randomized and different. Therefore, you couldn't look up the solutions.
You know, I've been thinking about this. I thought about doing something for Starstruck Vagabond, actually, as a sort of side thing where you could send... like party members or people you know off on like scouting missions or colonization missions, and you just like hear back from them through text, like through emails, and occasionally they like ask you for advice. They said, "Hey, we landed on this planet and we found this mysterious temple with like three buttons in front of it, and we pressed one of them and someone got shot in the fucking face with an arrow. So we're wondering if you had some advice for where we should proceed."
Yes.
And you could give them a little bit of advice and then like the story would just like continue in the background while you do your own thing. And every now and again you hear back from them on what they're doing.
I love that idea. I think that's phenomenal.
It's past 11, so I want. Shall we do a few super chats?
Before we do, let's do a few super chats. But then there's one case of a modern point and click adventure game that I think counts. But we'll get to that after a few super chats here.
Ooh, suspense! Stick around,
bum,
everyone.
Bum bum.
The Atomic Lemon, thanks for the €5, who says, I mean this, I feel that especially the later Trilby games would be able to compete with Sierra Stro LucasArts back in the day. Those were the games I made. He's sucking up.
But you also had the benefit of playing all those games.
Yes, I don't agree, the Atomic Lemon, but thank you. Marshall Graham gives $5 to say, thanks for live streaming and providing great content. Can Jack sing about butts for me?
Sure.
You're already thinking too hard, right? About singing about butts.
There's a cheek on the left and a cheek on the right, a crack on the middle. That's your butt. That's what I got right off the top of my head.
That's the sort of thing that makes me laugh. You can write clever jokes, but they never hit. That sort of thing Jack just sung. That is the sort of thing that makes me laugh.
There you go. Improv.
Casey donates $5 to say, thoughts on Telltale point and clicks before the just made the quick time decision games. Well, I guess the quick time decision games were making more money for them in the end. Maybe they weren't. I mean, they went bust. I wasn't a big fan. I felt like they were just, you know, ripping off other people's like abandoned ideas.
Sure. Let's see.
And just, you know, churning out some generic inventory puzzle chains.
Okay, yeah, they made the Sam and Max, Strong Bad's cool game for attractive people, Tales of Monkey Island.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
They just licensed any property that returned their phone calls, I think.
Oh, they made Puzzle Agent. Or they made Puzzle Agent 2, at least. That game sucks.
Isn't that like a Professor Layton ripoff?
It tries to be a Professor Layton ripoff, and it is not good.
Huh. You know, I watched Ross Scott's video review of it, and he made it look good.
Oh, I did not have a good time. Like, I enjoy the Professor Layton games quite a bit, as I find them nice and challenging. I did not enjoy the Puzzle Agent games.
Well, there you go.
There you go. All right.
Corey Long donates $5 to say, are visual novels a continuation of the point-and-click genre? Yes, they are. We just said. Adam Reuben Wayne donates £5 to say, ever play Kuala Lumpur, Journey to the Edge, and Three Skulls of the Toltecs? Jack, I think a Neil Breen point-and-click game would be great.
I mean, the only problem with a Neil Breen point-and-click game is no matter what you typed, it would be the correct answer. Oh, but that would be it. Okay, here's the Neil Breen game.
Adventure games that made about as much sense as a Neil Breenville.
Right? No, in a Neil Breen point-and-click adventure game, it would have to be a text adventure game. And anything you type would be the correct answer. No matter what you typed, it would be the correct answer. And then the game would continue on. You know, it would have to be a little AI dungeon-y. The game would continue on with whatever you typed being the correct answer. But there's a game that we play in improv called Pronunciation Guide, in which you say a sentence and then you have to change how you pronounce one of the words, and then every player has to pronounce that word that way you change it every time they say it in the future. And that would be the Neil Breen adventure game.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have not played those games you referenced, Adam Reuben Wayne. Sorry.
Yeah.
Christopher Webb donates $5. Say, jumping off of some earlier super chats, what are your thoughts on things like the Nonary games? Do they count? I'm not sure what you're on about there. Let me just look that up.
The Nonary?
Nonary games. Nonary. Oh, the Zero Escape games. I haven't played those. But those are, you know, Japanese visual novels with a sort of Saw setup, as I understand it.
Ugh.
Where you're like a bunch of characters trapped in a game of survival.
I'm seeing that. Yeah, you're a bunch of, you know, like creepy, attractive-looking anime people who are, like, getting disemboweled. Yeah, I don't like them.
Creepy, attractive-looking anime people. So at least some of that is probably redundant.
Touché!
I haven't played those, but Japanese has its own adventure game tradition, of course, with like visual novels, but even stuff like Phoenix Wright that has some deductive gameplay that I quite enjoy.
Sure. I think, you know, Phoenix Wright has less deductive gameplay than I would like, but I love those Professor Layton games. I love, you know, just going up to someone and saying, here's a puzzle. Figure it out, dickhead.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. And last one, the Spawn Camp donates $5 to say, Yahtzee, your old point-and-click games up anywhere. Would love to give them a try. Yes, if you Google, I'm sure you can find some sources. Probably on like abandonware sites and stuff. Because my old games, I used to just release them all freeware. Because I was just looking for praise, really. I was looking to be praised for my creative efforts. And lately, I've philosophically come around to the idea that you need to be paid for your work if you're an artist, because you're sort of devaluing art in general by not asking to be paid.
I like it. Any thoughts on like putting them up even for free on like your itch page?
Well, I put my like dev diary games up because that was the stated intention for that was, you know, experimenting and having fun.
Yeah.
And also I was being paid a salary to make the dev diary series.
That's fair.
So, you know, my expenses were covered.
You need like a mega re-release. Like I want to say Edmund McMillan put together like the Basement Collection, which was just like a collection of all of his old Flash games. Put them out on Steam.
I thought about that. I think I'd want to like go back and polish them all up a little bit.
Sure.
If I was going to do that, then, you know.
That takes time.
That might require more attention than I'm willing to give.
Fair enough.
So yeah, if you want to search for my old games, if you search for Chzo Mythos, Chzo Mythos, you can probably find a source to download them from somewhere. What else did I do? I made a game called The Trials of Odysseus Kent before the Chzo Mythos, which was a sort of straight Monkey Island ripoff.
Gotta start somewhere.
And later on, like towards the end, because these were all games made in a development kit device called Adventure Game Studio, specifically designed so that amateurs could make point-and-click adventure games in the Sierra Astro LucasArts style.
Ooh.
So I was using that. And towards the end, when I started like losing interest in adventure games, I started trying to use the same tool to make non-adventure games. Like I used it to make a stealth platformer called The Art of Theft, and there's an action platformer called 1213. Mm-hmm. And a sort of space exploration thing called Adventures in the Galaxy of Fantabulous Wonderment. And eventually I realized it was probably a lot more efficient just to learn how to use Game Maker Studio instead.
Just how to use an actual like game software. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah, and that's worked out pretty well so far. Hmm. I was thinking of maybe like trying to pick up Unity as well.
Ooh.
But, you know, I'm all set in my ways now. I'm set in my Game Maker Studio ways.
Once you unpack though, like that's the new hotness, then you can make so much more. Maybe I have no idea how game making works.
All right, how about one more super chat?
Tire
49 gives €5 to say, what do you think about the Deponia series? I think I started playing the first one, but it didn't really grab me. There you go.
I read some of the Dinotopia books. Does that count?
That's not the same thing at all.
Not the same. Oh, okay. Well, then I can't help you.
All right. So what was the next point you wanted to make?
So, yeah, I have an example of a modern, fresh take on the adventure genre. We're talking about collecting clues, solving puzzles, and going to a strange and wondrous land. Are you ready? The Return of the Obra Dinn.
That's a good example. That's a good example of something that evokes the original spirit of the adventure game being something that's about solving a situation and solving puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
I think that shows how these days just having the inventory puzzle chain doesn't work anymore because you can just look up how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But Obra Dinn finds a way to bring deductive gameplay back into it. I think that's what you need to do these days. You need to be clever.
Yes.
Clev. Clever, hopefully more clever than L.A. Noire, but, you know, something in that area.
Well, and it's so tough because, as we talked about before, how can you make your players be clever without completely stopping all of their progression?
Well, I've seen game design tutorial videos that have talked about this very topic. Mm. How do you make a detective game? How do you make a game that's about the player deducing something without it just being, you know, pick three answers from a drop down and the correct one, and if they click the correct one, the game continues.
Exactly.
And I think the conclusion they eventually reached was it's just one way or another, just add more options to the drop down.
Mm.
So there's a couple of detective games where the way you solve the puzzles is to create a sentence. Like there's a sentence with two words blanked out, and you have to pick the word that fits in there from a drop down. So it's
okay.
like the suspect blank came to the blank in order to blank.
Oh.
And you have to piece together the correct conclusion. And because there's and the more variety you put into the more wrong answers you put in, the more smart the player has to be.
Ooh.
I think was the conclusion. Because then you can't brute force it.
And then do they find those words? Does the game supply the words that you could put in there? Or does the player have a journal of clues they found that they can take the words from? Were they talking about a specific game or this is an engine?
There were a few games they were talking about. I forget precisely what. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because in something like L.A. Noire, you just end up sort of going down the list.
Yeah.
But this was designed where the list, but the potential list, if you've got three blanks you need to fill in and each one has like 20 different options, that's exponential number of possibilities. So the more ways there are to be wrong, other than clicking on the correct answer, the more the player has to deduce things.
Sure. Well, I think that's
like the insult sword fighting. The player couldn't just brute force it. They had to deduce it because there were too many options.
Yeah. Well, and I think in a good detective game, the thing that the player could do is find more clues to narrow field, or at least, and not even narrowing, let's say there are 20 words, three blanks that you have to fill in, not even narrowing, just making it clearer for the player which of those 20 words go where. That's interesting. I like that.
I think Phoenix Wright does it pretty well.
Because
what you have to do there is you have to pick the specific thing that the suspect says and match it to the specific item that refutes the thing the suspect said.
Right.
So again, there's enough wrong answers that it becomes a challenge.
Mm. Yeah. That is a point of Phoenix Wright that I do enjoy. The objection system, if you will.
Mm.
Yeah. No, and I think that's really fun. I think none of it can bring the kind of lateral thinking that we felt while playing, or at least that I felt while playing text adventure games. You know, I know I was typing in something that they had already planned for, but to me, I had that feeling of, I gotcha, game. I got your number.
You know what else was fun in text adventures?
Mm.
That was another thing that really couldn't be brought across to graphic adventures. Whereas if you type something and not expecting it to work, or you just type something silly, not expecting a response, and the game actually did have a response for it.
Right?
That was the fun.
Yeah.
Like, if you typed, go fuck yourself, game. And the game went, no, you.
Right. And so, I want a way to
game,
bring that.
Sorry to interrupt, but there was a text adventure that I played.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was called The Quest for the Golden Egg Cup.
Okay.
Where you were on a mission from God to find his golden egg cup. And if you got flustered and just typed a swear and said, fuck off, game, the game would literally punish you by having your character put in the dungeon for swearing. Like, God would come down and say, you don't swear here, chummy. And then you get locked in a prison and you have to solve a whole additional bunch of puzzles to figure out how to escape from the prison cell.
That's beautiful. That's what we need. We, I, I just want games to surprise me. I want games to surprise me again.
Well, that's what we always want, isn't it? I guess if you summed up my approach to reviewing in a nutshell, that's all I want from a game.
Yeah.
Not the same shit as always.
Gustavo, no, Yahtzee said, sorry to interrupt, not don't interrupt. It would be extra funny, though, if you said don't interrupt while interrupting me. I think next time go for that.
It's like that gag where everyone's just sitting around silent, then somebody goes, wait, shut up.
Exactly. Well, and I guess thinking about games in the present that we feel have done this very well, stuff like Obra Dinn, stuff like the Phoenix Wright games that have those like little kernels. I don't even know if Professor Layton can be considered a point and click adventure game, because really it's just a puzzle solver. It's like,
there's no integration between progress and the mechanics of the puzzle. It's just solve this one puzzle and then we can move on.
Before I let you cross my bridge, here is a puzzle to solve. This is a town of puzzle freaks. That's it. That's the gimmick.
That's not the same thing as Obra Dinn. Obra Dinn felt to me like filling in a really hard crossword. You start with just the small obvious things and bit by bit unpick the rest of the clues until the whole grid is filled.
Yes.
And I've always loved solving crosswords. So there you go.
Yes. And as we've said many, many times, while I will consistently and constantly sing the praises of Obra Dinn, I also didn't like it because it was just too hard of a crossword puzzle for me.
You know what I've got into as well lately, actually?
What's that?
What are they called? Monograms? Nonograms? It's where you have like a grid of pixels.
Okay.
And you got like coordinates on the left and coordinates on the right. Mm-hmm. And you have to deduce which pixels are black and which are white.
Oh. What is this called? A nonogram?
Hang on. My wife got me into them. She plays them all the time.
Also known as paint by numbers, Picross. I've played over on the DS. That was a great game.
Yes, those things. Oh, I've really gotten into those lately.
Those are super great.
And again, as with the crossword principle, I just said deductive, because you start with a couple of surefire things, and you just unpick the clues until you can fill out the rest.
Yes. Well, and I guess maybe like that's the fun takeaway that we can take forward as far as like what modern games give us is keeping certain information from us and like just giving us those hints so we can fill in the rest. I think, you know, I'm not going to do it.
Were you going to bring up Dark Souls? You were going to bring up Dark Souls, weren't you?
Here's what I'm going to say. I'm not going to do it. In games that you and I have enjoyed, when their story is not splayed out in front of us and we only get the pieces to the story and we can put the rest together ourselves. I'm not saying a specific game, Yats. I'm not going to say it.
I suppose that's a good general game design thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because you can say the same thing about Metroidvanias. It's about starting from a small available bunch of tools and areas and expanding until you have mastered everything.
Right.
That's a good way to think of the appeal of, I don't want to say intellectual games. It's games that are more about, you know, the longer term experience, higher brain experience.
Well, and we can take those examples across genres and just, you know, at the end of the day, we're asking game developers to trust us as players to figure something out. And to me, like, that's when I usually end up like absolutely hating a game. It's because I feel insulted by the game. And, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. And I hate the games that I reserve the most hate for are the games that feel like they're wasting your time or talking down to you.
Yes.
Like games like like in Zelda, where they hold you up for 5 minutes so they can tutorialize the next bit of the game for them in an endless piece of dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know from a designer perspective, obviously, like, I'm not a game designer, but, you know, I do, like, I design dungeons for my players and I design puzzles for my players. And that's something that I always, in Dungeons and Dragons, that's something that I always struggle with. And I try to get just right about, like, how much information do I put out there for them to figure this out? Like, ooh, this is a really neat puzzle. How much can I give them before it's too easy or it's too obtuse, right?
That's the struggle, isn't it? You got to ride the line.
Yeah.
You got to make it not so obvious that it's not fun to figure out.
Right.
But not so hard that they never figure it out.
Exactly. Like, you want to make them feel clever, even though you know the answer and you could just say it at any time. That's the nice balance, and I think a lot of point and clicks in the past had that balance. They made us feel clever, and so yeah.
Yes, and then the internet came along, walkthroughs came available, and it fucked everything up.
Well, just don't look at the walkthroughs.
That's easy to say until you find yourself stuck, and it would be so easy to just progress. No, we're not all as strong-willed.
That's true. Know. No, that's really true. Because as soon as you break that seal and you look up one, it just gets easier to look up the second and easier to look up the third. Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah. Shall we go back to Super Chats for a bit?
We shall go back to Super Chats. I feel like we had a nice, meaty conversation there.
All right. Let's finish them off then. Adam Robin Wayne gives us £2 and asks simply, VR adventure games? Which is something you brought up in the past.
Yes. If you had an escape room type game where you could interact with every single object within that room, that would be perfect for VR.
Yeah. I'd say there's a lot of VR adventure games, but, you know, it's often very limited what you can interact with.
Right.
And if it's limited, then it's easy to brute force. But as we were saying, the more options, the more wrong options, the more deductive and interesting for a smart player.
Yes. And that would make, day one, I'm there. Listen, we're getting that stimulus check. That's going to a Vive or a something, baby.
Well, if you buy a Valve Index, that'll probably eat up the entire stimulus check.
Well, you know, I'll have to get it before my wife does. I get the mail here. What I'm saying is that's an experience that would be worth it for me in VR, where I could be clever. I like feeling clever because I don't feel like I'm clever in real life. So yeah, I like feeling clever in video games.
We all like games that make us feel clever because it's nice to feel clever.
Absolutely.
That's why Oberdin's are good. The Spawn Camp donates $5 to say you could try out the Godot engine. It has a similar Python-esque language to GMS2 and it's open source, so you don't have to pay a fee to use it. Well, that's all very well, but I know how to use GMS2, and I've already paid for it, so I'm fine.
Maybe that's just general for anyone else.
Aditya donates 100 rupees to say, "Hey, Yards, have you read the latest Dresden Files books, Peace Talks? Read them for the first time after hearing you reference Ghost Story on ZP." Oh, you read them for the first time after hearing them first reference Ghost Story on ZP. No, I have not read the latest one. Those books are kind of trash.
Mm.
But, you know, if you're in the right mood, it's like a nice McDonald's meal.
Mm.
Have you read the Dresden Files books?
Probably not.
Kind of janky books. I once referred to them as, like, the sword and trench coat owning 20-something nerdy young man's equivalent of a Harlequin romance book.
Oh. I'll put them up here. Oh, yeah, this does not... Already just looking at the cover, I'm out, but...
Yeah.
did you say trashy books? Like, they're just...
No.
They're
a bit... I don't know if trashy is the right word. Okay. Junky like junk food.
Yeah, it's like detective smut. Where instead of boobies, it's easy to digest detective stuff.
Fantasy detective. Urban fantasy detective.
Oh no.
Stuff. Yes. Anyway, RetroStation 1989 donates $10. Thank you very much. To say, wife and I love Jack, full stop, and Yahtzee, full stop, and I love Trilby.
Oh, you got two. That's great.
Okay, that's all right then.
Great. That, you know what? That's all great.
Ian Cassidy donates $20 to say, if you can use the mouse for all inputs, does it count as a point-and-click game? Discounting gaming mice with more inputs than a standard console controller. Well, I think we said before that there's a general problem with genre names in gaming.
Right.
I mean, yeah, a lot of things involve pointing with a mouse and clicking.
Right.
But we were talking specifically about point-and-click adventure games, which is a specific thing, and I know this would all be very confusing to an alien from space.
It might even just be confusing to a young person who might not know the genre.
All right, fine.
We are old men, Yahtzee.
Yes, yes. as you and my hairline continually remind me.
It's a going back.
And last one.
Yes.
US $5 from Prongs, who asks, have either of you read the Stormlight series by Brandon Sanderson? Well, I haven't.
I have not. I have made... I finally gotten into the book that I wasn't reading, The Year of the Witching. Ooh, lovely book.
Yeah, I still have to get into the one I'm not reading.
And that's fair. Take your time. No one's pressuring you, but it's a...
I'm still playing Persona 5 in the evenings. I'm probably for the foreseeable future, because I get like 1 hour of free time after the baby's gone to bed, sure. And that game's like 100 hours long.
Then you do you. You do you.
Hold the phone. One more.
What?
Super chat. No more super chats now. We will stop reading them out after this one. Meister Kleister Heister.
Nice.
Gives €5 to say, Yahtzee, have you read the military sci-fi comedy Epic Failure by Joe, surname I'm not even going to try pronouncing. I overall liked it. Series ending was meh. No, I haven't read it, but I'm intrigued by sci-fi comedy because there's so little of that. I was deliberately like trying to research sci-fi comedy before I wrote my sci-fi comedy book, and I was astonished by how little there is, at least in like mainstream book circles.
Yeah, there's I think sci-fi
Hitchhiker's Guide, Hitchhiker's Guide, the Red Dwarf novelizations, and maybe Harry Harrison, but that's about all you'll get.
I think that's playing to your audience. I think people know that, like, people, like, if sci-fi readers like to be taken very seriously, so they don't want no dang jokes in their very serious books about spaceships that go pew-pew.
Well, I grew up on Red Dwarf.
Yeah, no.
I've always liked sci-fi comedy.
Me too. Pew-pew.
And, yeah, I'm not really big into the hard science aspect of it, if I'm honest. That seems a bit dorky.
Yes, that's the audience, Yahtzee. The audience is dorky. The audience is dorky and wants to believe that in a future world they will be superior because of their dorkiness.
I guess you could say I'm a comedy nerd.
I'm
a nerd for comedy and nerdy comedy games.
There you go. All right, back to Fuck Quest.
Well, Jack's going to get back to Fuck Quest, and I am going to figure out something equally fulfilling to fill the day with. Can you still get Fuck Quest? I'm curious.
According to this, if you... let's see here.
You can get it on myabandonware.com.
Oh, okay. Oh, there's a retrogames.cz has a browser version, a DOS browser version of Fuck Quest.
What? There's a browser version.
Hold on. It's installed. Oh, hold on. I'm going to see. Oh.
And that was the last we heard of Jack before his entire computer was destroyed by a virus.
You are Richard. You need some... Oh my.
Yeah, that's the one.
Do you hear it?
Is it making PC speaker noises?
Boop, 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 boop. What is this song?
I think that's from a Space Quest game. I think he was using like the AGI engine that the early space quests were made in, and he just seems to have ripped the sound files out.
Oh God, no! I gotta stop it now. It's making awful noises.
Yeah.
Okay. There we go.
Don't play through Fuck Quest. or for that matter, Fuck Quest 2: Romancing the Bone.
That I'm
also seeing on this. Wow.
But apparently, you can play it for free in your browser right now. Turn the speakers down, though, as the sound is a little much.
I wouldn't.
No, it did not look. It did not look good or sexy. So I'm going to see if I can find Jake the Pimp.
Well, anyway, perhaps we should wrap things up.
I thought we did already. But yes, let's wrap things up. Do we have any closing thoughts on adventure games besides the fact that we like these elements? Trust the players, give us hints, don't walk us through it.
Let's all stop talking about isn't it a shame adventure games are dead, or no, really, adventure games are still alive. I'm so sick of that fucking argument. Some of them are still around for nostalgia purposes, and otherwise it just sort of evolved into new forms to adapt to the current times.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
That's great. Then that's great. Also, quick update on Jake the Pimp. The official name of the game was Jake's Booty Call. Just want to make sure that's put out there. Booty Call.
All right. Bear that in mind.
So I played a lot of those games.
Okay, I can tell. Well, thanks for listening to Slightly Something Else, the live podcast that we do every week here on the Escapist YouTube channel.
That's right, the audio version of this will be available shortly. Thanks for coming, everybody. Thanks for watching and or listening to this. And we'll talk to you later. We'll slightly see you later. Once we see it, Tuffy!
He was here all along.
Tuffy was here.
Bamboozled again.
Oh, Yahtzee, you trickster. Bye, everyone.
Bye.